This episode is brought to you by Washington Wine. Download the Map My Washington Wine app. It's Map My WA Wine and get all the Washington wine right in your hand. Washington Wine, this is now.
HRN has a brand new look, but we're sharing the same delicious stories. Invest in the future of food radio by becoming a monthly sustaining member at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's Tuesday, August 3rd, 2021, and we're talking about the summer of craft malt. And our New York show today is with Jeff Lyons of Endless Life Brewing. So let's go around and introduce each other. Start with Jeff. Where are you from and where do you work and all that stuff?
Hey, Jimmy. Thanks for having us. I'm Jeff Lyons. I'm the owner and the brewer at Endless Life Brewing in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. And right now I'm in Bed-Stuy, a short walk from there.
Great. And Ted?
Ted Hawley with New York Craft Malt up here in Batavia, New York. Malting all the New York grains for everybody.
That's great. And Chad?
My name is Chad Meggs. I'm a hop grower from Casanova, New York.
Thank you. And Chris?
Hey guys, it's Chris Holden from the New York Hop Guild.
Okay, so we got, you know, those guys are at a very lively brewery up somewhere upstate. There's a lot going on with New York Ingredients, and it's come so far in the last 10 years. And Jeff, I wanted to talk to you because I know you as a brewer with many hats for many years, and I love your beers. But I never thought of you as focused on New York State ingredients. And I saw you had started a series at Endless Life Brewing about Meet the Hop Grower with Chris Holden. Just tell us about your backstory, man, because like I said, I love your beers. I've had your beers at Keg and Lantern. I've had your beers before at Greenpoint. And let's talk about what New York ingredients mean to you as a brewer.
Yeah, so I've had the fortune at all of the places that I've brewed beer to play around with New York ingredients a little bit, but it was never the big main feature. And so I knew when I got out on my own and started my own brewery that we wanted to be 100% New York ingredients from the very beginning. And it's a lot of reasons. There's the quality of the ingredients, and you know, everything that's in New York is going to be a little bit distinct from anywhere else. So you get to play with new flavors. Plus you get to build relationships with incredible people like the ones on the show today.
Great. So just bring us up to date. Where are you at with Endless Life? You know, it's been such a crazy year and a half. I haven't been over there yet, but thank you. You sent me a couple of beers and we'll talk about them today.
Yeah, so we opened in February. We got licensed in mid-February, and given the restrictions and just the state of the world, we didn't feel very good having events and inviting a bunch of people to come together in the same room. And so what we're doing is in a couple weeks, August 20th through the 22nd, we're having a grand opening celebration, sort of a party because we couldn't have a party when we opened sort of deal. So 6 months in, we're celebrating our opening.
That's great, man. Let's go through our guests, too. So, Ted, you know, you're at New York Craft Malt. The malt industry in New York has really evolved the last 6 or 7 years. Just tell us how it's changed for you. And you know, you're up to 5 silos now.
Well, in the beginning years, which wasn't too long ago, 8 years ago, there wasn't really any malting barley grown in New York State. So, we've come a long ways with that, with Cornell jumping on board and coming up with their own variety now. But the barley was marginal in the beginning years. That means the malt was marginable. We've come a long ways. I think now we've got world-class malt being made in New York State with world-class barley that's being grown in New York. We've started with just base malts, you know, and that's where everybody starts out. And all you could really make is like a pale or a pilsner in the beginning stages, but now you can get chocolates, crystals, even flakes now. So we've evolved quite quickly in a short period of time.
That's great. About how many breweries are regularly using your malt now?
On a regular basis, probably 50 or a little bit more. And then we have a good 30 that are on once a month or so. So quite a few breweries are in New York State are using our malts at this time.
I saw that there's so many really great breweries in New York now. And I was looking at the list of the Governor's Cup, some of the New York State winners. Are there a couple of those winning beers that used your malt, Ted?
Actually, yes. Last year, Big Alice, their Governor's Cup beer was made with all my malt. And also this year with Eli Fish, that beer was made with all my malt as well.
Great. Hey, back to Jeff. So Jeff, you know, in your career, as you've worked with, you know, Chad and Chris and Ted, what choices did you have to make when you were starting your own line at Endless Brewing?
Well, fortunately, you know, given that I was able to play a little bit with it, both at the breweries that I worked at and as a continued avid home brewer, I've been able to really sort of hone some of it in, or at least sort of understand the flavor profile of these ingredients in the way that I did, you know, like continental ingredients or well, you know, New Zealand hops or something of that nature. So I was lucky to learn just through practice, and repetition, but, I was also working at Brooklyn Homebrew at the homebrew shop when Ted first got up and running, and there was good periods there where we consistently carried Ted's malt. So even back to the very early days, I was able to use his malt. So I've been sort of following along and watching the growth and the progress there. So kind of from the beginning with Ted. And then I got to know Chad and Chris a lot more recently, you know, handful or so years ago, and sort of same thing, just got to know them and their ingredients side by side.
Oh, that's great. So I'm drinking the Endless Life Brewing Para Siempre. It says Mexican lager. What ingredients are in that, and anything from the folks on this call today?
Yeah, entirely. So I think the two beers that you have, the Kolsch and the Mexican lager, both use 100% of Ted's malt. And the hops in the Mexican lager, the Para Siempre, those actually came from Chad. Yeah, we used Magnum hops from Chad in that.
So at the Vineyard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get Chad. Chad, let's talk a little bit about the Vineyard and how you interact with brewers like Jeff.
Sure. There was actually an event, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago now, down in New York City, where that was kind of like grower meet brewer type of event. There was a bunch of growers and a bunch of brewers down there. And Jeff actually had a very unique story. I went down there and I met Jeff, and he told me he couldn't stay very long. He was off to meet, he was going to go to a concert, a Kruder and Dorfmeister concert. I'm like, this is such a New York City type thing. And I almost ditched everything to go with him. But since then, he's kind of kept in touch. And he's, you know, made a commitment to New York ingredients that, you know, us at the Vineyard really appreciate.
And what is the Vineyard? Are you guys hop growers?
Yeah, the Vineyards, we started out as hop growers, you know, just maybe about 9 years ago now. And we've kind of morphed from that. A lot of other growers in the area couldn't really find markets and weren't really, you know, good at selling their own products. So we started aggregating hops from other growers as well and just sell it under the Vineyard brands. Let's call them Vineyard growers.
Oh, that's great. And what's a challenge for you right now, this time of year? What's going on in most of the growers' hops?
We're right up against harvest right now. I mean, the cones are in full bloom. They don't have the aromatics that they need yet, so that'll be coming on in the next couple of weeks. But pretty much all growers right now are really gearing up towards harvest, making sure their harvesters are running well, making sure they have their crews in place. This is pretty much go time for a hop grower.
Yeah, and what about the equipment? I mean, I remember like even 8 years ago, hop harvesters were considered very rare in New York.
And they still kind of are, but there's been a couple of new entries into the market where, for not a ton of money, you can get a small scale harvester. Some work better than others. Us, we were, pretty new to the game almost a decade ago, and we ended up going with a harvester that we purchased from Germany, sight unseen. I remember the day it came to our farm. I had no idea how it worked, no idea how to hook it up, but we figured it all out. We put it all together, and it's been a staple of the business ever since. And she just hums along. So we spent a lot of time this day making sure that the harvester's happy, and hopefully she comes through for us for the next month, because we're going to be working her hard.
Yeah. Hey, Chad, earlier today you said you had a question for Jeff about navigating brewing and using New York ingredients. You want to ask him that question?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jeff, ever since the Kruder and Dorfmeister concert evening, you told me that, you really wanted to use New York ingredients and you had a commitment to that. I was just kind of wondering how the landscape had changed. I mean, back then, there wasn't that many growers. Some people didn't know what they were doing. Some did. What is in the eyes of a brewer, how has the landscape in terms of hop growing changed for you?
Well, I think overall, malt and hops, the quality has gotten significantly better overall. But I think for myself and Jason at Strong Rope, very much it's a game of sort of finding what you like and who you trust, and sort of whittling that wide list down to, a handful of people that you like on a personal level, but moreover, who are just bringing the quality and that you can trust it no matter what they send you or what you ask for or what you speak to them about, that you can trust their word and trust what they send you, that it's going to be good. I know that one of the things that you and I worked on was there was a project that Alex Biederman and I worked on where we would get like a pound of hops from various hop growers in the state, and we'd divide them up between the two of us and brew as many different batches of beer on a homebrew scale as we could with those hops, different styles, and then get together about once a month with Jason and drink through those beers and try to understand what that hop expression is across a bunch of different styles of beer, to try to better understand what that hop is actually giving you in a beer, sort of try to, cancel out all the background noise of what's happening in the beer and find the common denominator. And I think that was really helpful, just sort of running experiments like that.
This was awesome, by the way, Jimmy. I just got to tell a story here real quick because this was awesome. So we actually sent Jeff, just what he was saying right there, some of our Galena hops. And Galena hops, traditionally in the Pacific Northwest is a bittering hop. Jeff and Alex and whoever else was involved in this ended up making, I believe it was a lager, a pale ale, all smashed. So it was that one single hop. And I remember I used to tout it as a bittering hop. We wanted, to grow that one bittering hop. But you really opened my eyes to be able to use that as an aroma hop. So, not only was that experiment hopefully, good for you, but it's completely changed the way that I sell that. So that was pretty cool. So thanks for doing that.
Absolutely. Thank you for allowing us to. So it changed our view in that too. And the Kolsch that Endless Life opened with actually uses all Galena hops because of that. And that's not a choice I would have made before we did that experiment. So yeah, we both had our minds blown a little bit with that.
Cool.
Jeff, in the different places you've brewed, and even now opening your own place, have you've had the time to be able to step aside and do these types of tests and kind of ongoing learning, haven't you?
Yeah, you absolutely have to make the time to keep learning and keep, I found homebrewing to be really, really helpful in that, once or once a week or once every other week. Even if you're banging out all the batches day by day at the day job, you know, the home brewing's where you can kind of really do simple experiments to learn what these ingredients really will bring. Yeah. And not trying to necessarily brew a complete vision, a completed beer that you might be happy sharing with somebody else, but doing something simple just to learn.
So I know that with malt, you can do the hot steep test. Is there a way that you can tell what the hops are going to be like other than brewing them?
I think these guys can speak to it more. I think traditionally you rub some cones. I have to be honest and tell you that I'm not as good at envisioning what the final beer is going to taste like or smell like by rubbing cones. I think that's a learned practice that I probably have many more hours to gain more knowledge than I have right now. But these guys fantastic.
If you're using different hops from different growers, you're probably going to have to brew it like you said you did anyways. I mean, it's not like you're buying from the same farm every year and you're checking two different varieties, right?
Sure. And, you know, you get to see some consistency, and I think that gets better over time. But it's an agricultural product, which is part of the joy. That's part of, you know, the excitement of using New York ingredients is that it's less commodified and it's more variable year by year, particularly in the quest to deliver better hops or better malt for us. I think these guys take chances to try to deliver just the best that they can and sort of value that over consistency at this point. Not that they're not consistent, but just, you know, getting better is more important than giving you the same.
I agree with you. Hey, let's get Chris on. Chris, how are you, brother?
Pretty good.
So you tell us a little bit about your New York Hop Guild and how you know Jeff and how you interact with brewers like him.
Yeah, so the New York Hop Guild, we're a collection of growers here in New York. And then we also work with a bunch of growers in other countries and other states and everything. We met Jeff when he was at Keg and Lantern, I think. And we've worked together a little bit here and there, different collabs and basically talk and shop and where the New York industry is. And we're super pumped when he decided to end up doing his own brewery, basically.
Yeah. And where have you been? Like last time I had you on a couple years ago with Jason from Strong Rope, and you were part of one hop farm, but you were also kind of just getting this New York Hop Guild going.
Yep, that's correct. Yeah. So we still have our farm, which is Crooked Creek Hops, which we're, you know, that's growing as well. Not quite as quickly as the guild is. But yeah, so the guild now, we're actually in Elmira, New York. We've got a warehouse there and a full processing facility and, you know, where we can store that and some fruit puree and, you know, all these hops that we're selling from all over the place, basically.
And where are the farms in New York that you're getting hops from?
So anywhere's from Western New York all the way out on the shores of Lake Erie to, you know, Central New York and Oneonta, basically. The majority of them would be, you know, just north of the Finger Lakes or just south of the Finger Lakes and a few of them there in Central New York region. So it's kind of spread out all over the place, similar to what, you know, the hops, how hops were grown in back in the 1800s, basically.
And are you on the traditional areas where hops were grown then?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the only place that we don't cover that hops had a big area in back in the day is up along the St. Lawrence River, basically. So, but everything else, Central New York, like the Lake Ontario region, the I-90 region, and the southern interior of New York.
I think I forget how you guys got started. So you already had the farm, and then when did you start growing hops?
So we started growing hops in 2014. I'd be the seventh generation farmer on that land. And I think the second hop farmer, my grandfather said that his great grandfather had some hops, and sure enough, we found where he used to grow because we found some old ones. But yeah, it's we did that. And then with the guild, we had another farm approach me about putting something together. And after about a year's worth of talks, we we decided to jump on it and start talking to some other farms and get the guild going, basically.
Yeah. Is there like a popular hop that you have, or is it just each hop is different from each grower each year?
There is. I mean, we do have some hops, certain varieties from certain farms that are pretty popular. And that's kind of what, you know, I guess you could say we specialize in. The guys that are doing really well with certain varieties, we want them to expand. And the guys that maybe aren't doing so well with those varieties, we try to get them to rip those out and do, you know, do hops that they're actually doing well with. So that way the hops that they're growing are agronomically correct. And because what we're learning is some of these hops grow better in central New York compared to, say, the southern tier or, say, in the sands along, you know, Lake Ontario. So as a collective of growers, we get to kind of play around with that and find what works best for each grower. And so that way they're more sustainable. As a cumulative effort, you know, we've got a couple of varieties that do well, like our Michigan Coppers. And this last year or earlier this year, we released a new thiol footprint based New York, all New York, 100% New York State blend called Excelsior that's done very well. We're actually sold out of it at this point in time, but we're expecting to do much more with that.
Great. So you're at this Empire Farm event.
Yep, that's correct. Yeah, me and Chad are both here.
Just give me like a snapshot of your day or this week. Is there more time spent on the business, on talking to the hop growers, talking to the brewers? How is your week set up? Because I'm sure you have 20 things going at once.
Yeah, right now it's a little crazy. It's trying to balance it all out, right? So you're talking with farmers to set up meetings to make sure that everything's, you know, they're comfortable with everything. Making sure that they understand when we might need, you know, stuff harvested, when they are going to need to harvest certain things, talking with brewers about contracts and wet hops and all sorts of everything, you know, basically everything. I mean, most of the day to day, I was walking some of my own yards and I was on the phone the whole time while I was doing scouting. So, you know, it's a little bit of everything this time of year.
You know, New York State is so big. Especially when you get out west. So where are you right now? Where is that farm event?
We're at I'm back in the brewery at Heritage Hill Brewery and Kitchen up in Pompeii, New York right now.
Where is that?
South.
It's just south of Syracuse.
South of Syracuse, okay. Wow. And Jeff, do you appreciate all the diversity of farms and climates and everything in New York State? It's quite amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. We're blessed to live where we do, to where we, you know, where I can open a brewery and do something like this, where we can get all of our ingredients from within the state and have, you know, so much choice. I don't feel boxed in at all. You know, these guys work their ass off to give us high quality ingredients and do the analytical work and the organoleptic work to help us get where we need to be and know what to expect out of this. Yeah. These guys are great.
So back to your craft, the Para Siempre right now, that's my favorite beer of the summer. I feel like that good lagers have to be craft lagers now. What is it about this lager that, I can say this makes it better than the other beers I've had this summer?
Well, I'd start with the ingredients. You know, you have to start there. It all starts and ends there. Doesn't matter how good I am at what I do. If the ingredients aren't good, we're not going to have very good beer. It all rests on the shoulders of all the farmers and the maltsters and the hop growers. Yeah.
And when you made the beer, just tell us, like, this recipe and how you created it. Were you open to how different ingredients would affect the flavor, or you went in knowing how it would come out?
I think with this particular one, I had more of a vision of what I wanted the end result to be, whereas most beers I'm you know, I have an idea of where I want it to go, but I'm totally open to if it takes a side road, or if we find something that we really like by accident, we can kind of learn from that and keep moving forward with that, build upon that. But this one definitely stems from, you know, way too much money and way too many cans of Modelo.
I like it. And what about Ted? What malt is in this beer, the Pars Sempre?
You would have to ask Jeff that.
So
you don't keep a note from every damn beer that's brewed with your malt.
I would have to go back to the invoice, I guess, and see.
So the Mexican lager is malt wise, it's 100% of Ted's Excelsior Pilsner malt and his flaked corn, which is actually the first commercial batch of flaked corn. Although our sour red that we have has some of the test batch he did in it. So technically that preceded this, but this is the first commercial batch of the flaked corn.
Wow. So Ted, is this the new New York barley that was talked about the last couple of years, the Excelsior?
It's kind of a coincidence. I've had my Excelsior Gold Pilsner kind of trademarked about 5 years ago, maybe a little more. But Cornell's new variety that they developed just for the Northeast, there was some competition on what they should name it, and the name came out to be Excelsior Gold. So just coincidental, the names are similar.
But it's a good name for all.
So when Ted gets to malt that, it's going to be Excelsior Squared or Double Excelsior.
I like that. I like it.
Wow.
Nice.
Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes and talk more on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by the wine the world is talking about, Washington Wine. From its one-of-a-kind landscapes to a statewide culture of craft and innovation, Washington is made to make wine. That's why winemakers from around the globe are coming to Washington to set up shop, and why 90-point wines are practically falling from the skies. Ready to sip for yourself? August is Washington Wine Month, meaning it's the perfect time to explore some wineries, 1,050 and counting, and try some of today's most exciting wines. The new Map My Washington Wine app makes it easier than ever to. You can get to know all the wineries, tasting rooms, and vineyards, find nearby events, customize your ultimate wine trip, and more. Download the free Map My Washington Wine app. That's Map My WA Wine, and get all of Washington wine right in your hand. Washington Wine, this is now.
HRN is excited to unveil the new look of Food Radio. We have a new brand identity and a new website. Our site makes it easier than ever to discover new podcasts and dig through our archive of 16,000 episodes. It's been 12 years since HRN started broadcasting Food Radio, and we've made it this far thanks to the support of our global listening community. It's because of member donations that Beer Sessions Radio is on the air with 30 other weekly shows. Your contributions give HRN the security we need to stay on the air during the pandemic and are allowing us to reopen our studio. Becoming a monthly sustaining member of HRN shows how much you care about Beer Sessions Radio and Food Radio, what it means to you.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Check us out and become a member at heritageradionetwork.org. There's a new website and a lot of benefits for members at heritageradionetwork.org. So, Jeff Lyons, Endless Life Brewing, man. Very excited for your beers. I've always been a fan of your beers.
In addition to your Mexican lager in the Kolsch, what else have you been making regularly? Are you doing regular beers? Or are you just doing some batches? And you know, what's it like at the tasting room in terms of like selection?
We're doing batches and trying to remain, you know, introduce beers as seasonally appropriate. I'm sure all these beers will find their way back into the rotation at some point. Some of them very specific seasonally, and some of them just whenever we have an opportunity. So yeah, we'll see repeats. We don't really have flagships, but you know, I think we'll have a big wide selection that you'll, if you like something, you'll see it come back.
In terms of like fun ideas, I saw that you were offering a beer for a year.
Sure. It's sort of a CSA kind of concept where, you know, we thought that we would be on about a once a month release schedule on each side, both on the lager side and on the mixed firm side. So we thought, you know, if you pay some money up front, you could buy into sort of a membership or a communal type thing where you pay all your money up front and then you can come in once a month and get a 4-pack on the lager side, 4-pack of cans, or you can pick up a bottle a month on the mixed fermentation / sour side.
That sounds pretty great.
Yeah. And then throw a few perks in just for the commitment and the support. Yeah. T-shirt and some, you know, glassware. Have some fun with it.
Yeah. You know, you definitely undersell yourself, because I do love your beers, man. I remember 2 years ago for Rye Week New York, you had made some kind of rye beer, a Rogan beer, at one of the places you worked, and I've always loved your beer. So, you know, in the course of your work, what's a question that you would ask Ted, you know, New York Craft Malt? You know, I've been talking about your Para Sempre, your lager, other beers. What's a question that you would be asking of the craft maltster?
Ted, I think we could go till the sun comes up with the amount of questions that I've asked Ted over the years. He's always been so knowledgeable and so accommodating, as with Chris and Chad and everybody else that we deal with. I'm not sure, Ted. Anything pop to the front of your mind on that?
Well, I you kind of hit it with the hops and you doing all the experiments with the hops. You and Jason and Alex and you know, being in this industry from the very beginning, which isn't too long ago, the starting point. A lot of brewers have used my malt, but then they go silent, and I don't know if it's good or it's bad, or so if I'm not getting any feedback, you know, I must be doing everything right, right? not so much, but I do want to give you you kudos, and part of my success, if not all my success, you and Jason and Jeff and Big Alice, John and Kyle, you guys have been giving me constructive criticism from the very beginning. I've been listening and adjusting. And if I didn't have that, I don't know where I would be, because I would be thinking I'm doing everything right. But I knew I wasn't, but I can only adjust what I'm doing listening to you. And I want to thank you very much for all that input. And I continually listen to your input. And I just want to thank you for helping me grow my company as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely welcome. It's my pleasure. See, it's the only way any of us get better, right? You just need that constructive criticism. I definitely need it for my beers. I need people to tear these things apart, find the little flaws, yep, so that we can get better.
I just don't know. You've picked a really hard way when you can get commodity malts and commodity everything for cheaper. Why would you go this hard way?
I got a hard head just like you.
Nice. Agree.
No, Jeff, you have to answer that. That's Ted's question.
I think we touched on it before. I think it's the relationships that we can form, and I think it's the openness to wanting to basically, I think the, you know, we're never going to nail a beer the same way that somebody else, anywhere else around the country or the world can, by getting something that is more of a commodity malt, where they can, you know, buy the same malt that everybody else gets, buy the same hops that everybody else gets, use the same yeast, and, you know, you're going to have variation from brew house to brew house, but more or less you can make the same beer as somebody else if you decided to. Whereas what we're doing with the New York stuff is much more of, you know, finding our way through it and finding the best way forward.
Yeah. Jeff, talking about brewing in New York City and having a tap room in New York City, you opened during COVID. How have things changed in terms of your business plan? Originally, at one point, were you going to can? Were you only going to have a tap room? How did you originally envision this brewery, and where do you see it going now?
Well, I think with me, when you start putting, you know, serious thoughts on paper and really trying to hone it in and trying to figure out what's important to you and what's not, there was never a doubt that we were going to use 100% New York ingredients for the reasons we've already talked about. But that, you know, the community aspect of this, it applies there, but it also applies to how we want to interact with the community. And it's tough to do that. It's more difficult to do that in a more production type setting. So we always envisioned having a tap room. That was sort of the must have. It helps financially as well, obviously, to be able to sell pints and four packs directly to the community. But it's that interaction, being able to invite people in, have them have your beer, have a conversation with them while they're drinking your beer. Sort of going back to what we were talking about the constructive criticism, but also being able to tell your story and being able to tell the story beyond just what is in the glass and have that dissociated from the fact that this is an agricultural product, that it takes people like Ted and Chris and Chad and the rest to provide these ingredients and us to, or we wouldn't even be able to make beer.
Yeah. So how did the Meet the Hop Grower event go over?
It was a bit of a quiet one, but it gave us the opportunity to have some really in-depth conversation. Alex Biederman was able to come over, and the three of us were able to, we were there till about 2:30 in the morning, just drinking beer and talking about the state of the industry and kicking ideas back and forth.
Yeah, no, I've done that many times. You had an event, you turn it into a session.
Absolutely. But that's how we grow these relationships. Every time that, you know, Jason chauffeurs me up to a malt and barley summit or, you know, the state CBC or anything like this, you know, we certainly enjoy some beers, but that gives us the opportunity face to face to be able to catch up and figure out, you know, what each other are doing and where we sort of see ourselves going and how to get there together. I'll give Ted a lot of credit for one thing in particular, other than just the huge kudos in general, that, you know, I've probably nagged at him for 3 or 4 years at least to get a Munich malt made, that, you know, that was sort of the one big thing that we were missing in the state, was a beautiful Munich malt. And every chance I got, I'd nag at him for it. And he finally put one out a while back, and it's beautiful. It's everything I could have hoped for.
Which beers would you use Munich malt in?
I became a big fan of sort of sneaking them into a whole lot of beers. I believe I probably have a touch of it in the Kolsch. There's definitely a good deal of it. It's the main backbone of the Maibock that we made. And definitely lots of it in the Sour Red. I'll sneak them into a number of lagers and the sour beers as well. You just get a beautiful sort of rich, bready character out of a nice Munich malt that you can't get out of any other malt. So it's just something I fell in love with and knew that I wanted to somehow find a way to approximate with the New York ingredients. Ted definitely delivered.
Oh, good. Hey, let's go back to Chad. Chad, the Vineyard, bro. Just tell us more about working with the different hop growers. Because, like, you know, 10 years ago, growing hops was the sexiest thing. Everyone was – there were small hop grower meetings. People were trying to get anyone with a small farm to start planting hops. Homebrewers were planting them. Places like in the East Village, like Good Beer on 9th Street still has hops growing in their backyard that they give to homebrewers. Tell us about your industry now.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a little bit of an uphill battle, to be honest with you. So, like, when we first started on, you know, Cornell gave some information out that you plant, you know, 1 acre of hops and you're going to be filthy rich. Well, it didn't really turn out to be anything like that. So, you know, with the rise of hemp, too, I think hops kind of fell out of favor with the average grower that wasn't, you know, super serious, maybe the hobbyist or something like that. So we saw a little decline. But recently, we actually got through our organization, Chris and I both are members of Hop Growers of New York. We actually secured some money from the state to start a hop breeding program. It will take a couple years, but just like the Excelsior Gold, we will eventually have a hop specific to New York State. And since then, a lot of stuff has really kind of, you know, started snowballing a little bit. Like, people are starting to show interest in again. And in fact, in the last month, I've gotten, you know, calls from two hops, pole suppliers. Be like, hey, are you expanding? Here are some poles, you know, which I haven't gotten a call like that in probably 5 years. So there's also some interest up in Franklin County. They wanted to know who the growers are up in there, as they wanted to do an initiative through Cornell Cooperative. So it kind of seems like things are coming back a little bit. And, you know, even today at the Empire Farm events, you know, it's a bunch of farmers walking around and there's a whole craft beer aspect to this event. I had a ton of people come up to the booth and say, hey, you know, I'm interested in growing hops. What do I need to do? So I think it's kind of, you know, it's coming back a little bit. I think it's going to be a different scene, but, you know, people are still out there. People are still interested, and it's really only going to make the New York industry stronger as a whole, having, you know, many multiple farms growing crops. So in my opinion, the future is bright.
That's great, man. Very uplifting. Jeff, tell us what's in the Kolsch. Tell us about that beer.
So the Kolsch, we're trying to broaden the malt bill to add some depth to it. So the base of it's, again, Ted's Excelsior Pilsner malt, but we tried to use some unmalted, sort of raw white wheat to try to add a real doughiness to it, sort of on the underneath, a real soft mouthfeel, kind of, I don't know, like the most oaty oatmeal that you can think of, that kind of thing. What else is in there? There's some Munich for that rich breadiness that we were talking about. We used a few malts to try to build it out and build some body, so that instead of just getting just a straight ahead, like sort of saltine cracker type character in and of itself, but broaden it out beyond that, add some depth to the malt character.
Yeah, man. And hey, Ted, I want to ask you about some other New York State craft malt stuff. You said you're growing, or you're selling naked barley. Tell us about the naked barley and how what you're doing might differ from what is going on for bakers and other users.
Well, we started up, it was about a 3.5 year project. Jeff wanted me to do as well. But to start a flaking operation, there was no New York State grown flakes or produced any flakes in the state. So there's barley grown, there's oats grown, but you have to dehull them before you flake them. The flaking operation is we steam condition them, we cook them, then we run them through a big roller mill, then we dry them down and pack them up, but they're pre-gelatized for a quick conversion and so on. But the thing about the standard oats and barley normally grown, you have to dehull them or it'll just make a mess in the flaker mill. So I my attempt to skip a step in all this, which is dehulling the barley and the oats, I grew some hullless varieties of both. So little did I know there was also an initiative in New York State for naked barley for the baking industry, which we're kind of coming together on that. I will be malting them as well and roasting them as well. And the hullless barley will become bitterless chocolates and things like that. But for most sake, it was for the flaking operation, but we're going to be putting a full line of different roasts and flakes together for those hullless varieties.
Yeah, and I'm going to give a shout out talking about New York, rise of New York ingredients. My biggest champion and someone who's introduced me to so many people the last 12 years is June Russell, who worked for a long time, Grow NYC Green Markets, was the top inspector. So she was all around the 250-mile radius in New York City, inspecting all the farms. And at the same time, she had founded the Grow NYC Regional Grains Project way back in 2008 or something. And you know, now she's recently gone on to work full-time in grains at the Glenwood, which is a great agricultural nonprofit in the Hudson Valley. So I just want to give you guys a heads up that hopefully it seems like, I feel like the grains is going to go to the next level and hopefully malt with it, Ted. So
yes,
that's my plug for June. But
I second that. June's great.
I'll third that.
Yeah, Jeff, any other heroes you have out there? Like, talk about heroes. You know, like 10 years ago, 8 years ago, you and Alex and Jason, they're homebrewers that I knew, and you guys are doing great work. Who else should you give a shout out to?
I think Brett Taylor over at Wild East is doing some amazing things across the board, but in particular, you know, more pertinent to this conversation, he's using a whole lot of New York ingredients. I could be mistaken, but I'm pretty certain that all of his farmhouse style beers are using New York State ingredients, and they're just, you know, they're literally award winning, and they're absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, that's true. I know that in May there was the Schooner Apollonia, which was a sail freight coming down the Hudson,
mm-hmm.
and he brought about 10,000 pounds of malt from Hudson Valley Malt, and I know that someone actually put a horse on a cart and rode it over from the Brooklyn Terminal to Wild East.
Yeah,
so that's so good to hear.
We're doing good another stuff. Shipment in late September. Jason will be involved, Strong Rope. I believe that Wild East is in on this. And then I'm actually, Endless Life is brewing a collaboration with Five Borough. We're going to do a dark lager, and we're gonna have a shipment come down from Dennis at Hudson Valley Malting to come down on the Apollonia for that. The fun never ends.
That's great, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. The last thing is just, I've been a champion. I love things from farms. I love things local. I love things direct, whether it's eggs or anything. I always feel like, of course, it's better. It's fresher, less handling. We all know that, less preservatives. But when it comes to beer, it's the same as food. The taste is what does it for me. And I think the first beers I tried was in like 2014 that had, you know, malt from Valley Malt.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell the difference, and that's why I'm so excited about your Para Sempre lager. So I don't know. Do we have to do anything more to get the message out other than that the beer with local ingredients can taste better? I don't know. Let's take that one. Chris or Chad, because we all know fresh hops taste better. But
what we can do to make ingredients better, I don't know. Maybe just honestly, I think a lot of education, a lot of the consumers – they get a lot of marketing towards them for these, you know, Pacific Northwest hops, you know, Citra, Mosaic, you know, all these crazy things. I think if they were really, they'd be very surprised if they were to drink New York and, you know, really know that you can make those exact same beers with New York State ingredients. In fact, I'm drinking an Underground Beer Lab beer right now from Underground Beer Lab is a brand new beer, brand new brewery right here in Syracuse, New York. And it's a NIPA made with 100% New York hops from the vineyard. Thank you, Keith. And it's absolutely delicious. So education, I think, would go a long way.
That's a great line. Yeah, I mean, I still think the average person still thinks beer is a factory product or it's chemicals. So I think we've all got a long way to go. Ted, what about that in terms of like malt education? Do you feel that, I don't mean the diehard craft beer person, but does the average person even think that malt is in their beer?
I think most people think that the main ingredient is hops. Getting past that, you know, Chad's right on with the education part of things. I think the people that are serving the beers up front, your servers, they play a key role in explaining the beers and explaining this beer is supporting local agriculture, local producers, and keeping the money local. It's all part of that great story. So education will be needed forever, and you know, Chad's right on with that.
Well, there's certain brewers like Jeff, the beer should, and Strong Rope, the beer should taste mm-hmm. better too. I mean,
forgot to say that.
We all owe a huge debt of gratitude to Jason. That guy should never have to buy another beer, at least in the state of New York. We owe him a lot for all the work he's done, supporting these farmers and growers and maltsters, and the education he's given us allowed us to taste so many different things through Strong Rope's tasting room, to be able to learn from everything he's done, all of his experience.
What I've noticed is a lot of these trends are kind of coming up from New York City too. So there's been a lot of people down there, you know, Jason, Jeff, Brett, all these people, all these brewers brewing delicious New York State beers. That is starting to catch on, and it's starting to work its way upstate. So keep up the good work down there.
Hey,
absolutely.
Love hearing that. We will for sure. You guys
That's
too.
Great.
Thank you.
Well, thanks so much, Jeff. So, we'll be stopping by Endless Life Brewing out in that's in Bed-Stuy, right, in Brooklyn?
Essentially, yeah. We're technically Crown Heights. We're just south of Atlantic, which I think is the delineation. But yeah, it's essentially Bed-Stuy. We're on Franklin Avenue.
Well, thanks so much for the beers, and thanks for help putting the show together. So big shout out to Jeff, Chad, Chris, and Ted. Thanks to our engineer, Armin Spengen, and thanks for joining me on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Thanks so much, guys.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.